Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll return now to the revelations of the last 2 days about the federal government collecting data about every Verizon Business Network call and about foreigners on the internet and social media. With us now, New York Times correspondent Eric Lichtblau, who won a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on the Bush surveillance programs. Eric, thanks so much for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
First, we did yesterday's show, as much of this was very new and breaking, and I want to clear up a few points that we may have left people confused about. One is that the surveillance of Verizon data revealed in the court order was for calls on business accounts, not Verizon personal or residential telephone numbers. Is that your understanding?
Correct. The specific order that has now been disclosed, related to their business unit, although presumably there are other similar orders that could affect non-business customers, traditional, residential and other users.
Right. Our guest yesterday, Glenn Greenwald from The Guardian, the journalist who obtained the document, said he suspected this was part of a much broader ongoing surveillance program that probably does include personal Verizon accounts and, oh, by the way, also Sprint and T-Mobile and AT&T and other carriers. It's just almost random that the one document he was able to get his hands on pertained to Verizon Business. That rings true to you.
Yes, I think that's accurate.
Though still we should acknowledge there is no actual evidence of those
right.
other.
I think that's a fair assumption, but at this point it is only an assumption.
And it brings us to another confusing point. Much of the day one analysis was that this 3-month court permission for Verizon Business surveillance probably grew out of the Boston bombing investigation because it came in April. But Greenwald said, no, this looks like part of a permanent, ongoing surveillance program. And sure enough, here's 9 seconds of Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Dianne Feinstein yesterday afternoon.
As far as I know, this is the exact 3-month renewal of what has been the case for the past 7 years.
So what does Senator Feinstein's remark there clarify for you?
Well, that this is an ongoing program, that the timing with the renewal coming after around the time of the Boston bombings, I think, was probably more coincidental than anything else. Obviously, there was heightened concern because of the bombings about overseas links, but this is part of a broad program that's meant to sweep up any and all suspected terrorist threats overseas, and her timeline, 7 years, would put it back in 2006, which was around the time that the Bush administration was trying to bring some court procedure to their surveillance programs, which we wrote about earlier, which before that they had carried out essentially on their own without any court oversight and very little congressional oversight. So her timing would make a lot of sense in that they were trying to sort of codify and give some legal cover to a lot of the broad data mining and surveillance operations that they had undertaken.
Right. Now, listeners, we can take some phone calls, by the way, with your questions, if you want further clarification on what this is all about, or with your comments. Tell us if you care and why you care, 212-433-WNYC, or if you support it and why you support it, 212-433-9692. For Eric Lichtblau, New York Times correspondent, author of Bush's Law, The Remaking of American Justice. He won a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on the Bush surveillance program. And I guess, Eric, you're a good person to explain the difference, because the system in question now is not the original Bush program that was widely labeled at the time as warrantless wiretapping, whether that was an accurate term or not. What's the difference between that and this?
Well, I think the difference you're seeing is that this type of broad, almost dragnet approach to surveillance, whether you approve it or condemn it, has become institutionalized. That was the legacy of the Bush surveillance programs, which they undertook for the most part under the president's wartime authority that the White House claimed for itself. There was quite a backlash against that. There were several broad legal changes, as well as court court rulings that were put into place. In 2007, we had the Protect America Act. In 2008, we had the FISA Amendments Act, the FISA system that oversees this stuff. So what you had was the legalization, if you will, of a lot of the measures that Bush had undertaken on his own and handing those to Obama at the point where he came in, and there's been no sign that the Obama administration has curtailed any of those, has rolled back any of the broader legal authority they were given. If anything, they seem to have expanded and grabbed them and run with them.
And it's probably worth noting as a point of history that the system today, as you say, is from the law that Congress passed to regulate the Bush program in 2007, including with the yes vote of Senator Barack Obama.
Yes, right. Which was controversial. He had opposed the Bush wiretapping program, which again was done outside the authority of the courts when he was a senator in an initial vote. Then later on, when he was a candidate, and by then a serious candidate, he ended up voting in favor of it and angered quite a few of his supporters who saw this as kind of turning on his record on civil liberties.
However, at the same time, here's a clip of something Obama said on the campaign trail in 2008.
You know, if you start asking them questions about their intelligence activities, warrantless wiretaps, things like that, they won't, you know, you can forget it. I think it's very important to remember that this is a government of and by and for the people. And the only way you can hold us accountable is if you know what we're doing.
So how was candidate Obama saying that while Senator Obama was voting for that law?
Well, I guess you'd have to direct that to him. And the other irony is certainly he's speaking there in favor of transparency, even in intelligence operations. I think you can make
indeed. And one of the things
very little transparency as far as these programs until now, and the only probably the most heated reaction from the administration is as we often see, is the threat of leak investigations, not disclosure about the programs themselves.
And even the court is secret, and the court document that was revealed, which basically enabled the government to do this kind of data collection from Verizon Business accounts, was in and of itself secret. So the transparency the president, then a candidate for president, called for in that clip, obviously is not something that he's pursuing under the law. Let me take a phone call. Jim in North Vale, you're on WNYC with New York Times correspondent Eric Lichbau. Hi.
Yes, I'm interested in if they're monitoring the web and they run across criminal activity, like child pornography or anything like that. Could they pursue that in civil courts?
That's an excellent question. That's come up in earlier surveillance operations. I think the short answer is no, they're not supposed to, as troubling as that may be to some of your listeners, that these are programs that are designed solely for counterterrorism and foreign intelligence purposes. And part of the deal, if you will, with the courts is that they're not going to be snooping around for, you know, a wealth of other information. Obviously, there'd be, you know, innumerable other pieces of evidence that could come up on money laundering or drug trafficking. You know, you name it, it's probably online somewhere.
And to that point, here's a little more of Senator Feinstein, a defender of the program, speaking yesterday about how all they're collecting is this metadata,
right,
records on who called who and from where and for how long, not the content of phone calls, unless they have a reason to suspect you for something. Listen.
These records, now I'm not talking about the content now, I'm talking about the records, can only be accessed under heightened standards. The information goes into a database, the metadata, but cannot be accessed without what's called, and I quote, reasonable, articulable suspicion that the records are relevant and related to terrorist activity.
So that's relevant and related to terrorist activity, which I think goes right to Jim's question, which is to say not relevant to other sorts of possible crime.
Right. This is not supposed to be used as a way of snooping into any number of other potential illegal activities that could be contained in Internet information. But I need to point out that the story is moving pretty quickly. And just last night, there were new reports of a related but separate program called PRISM, which involves not the phone companies but the technology companies, including Facebook and Yahoo and Apple and others. A document surfaced discussing their alleged participation in allowing the NSA and the FBI access to their servers, which raises a whole other series of questions beyond just what Feinstein is describing there as the metadata. That gets into all sorts of issues of content, of looking at what's actually on the pages and not just the who calls whom.
Supporter of the program, I think, Amy in Coney Island. Hi, Amy.
Yeah, good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. Well, when I hear about the Verizon, the government, actually, you know, the Verizon let the criminal, listen to my conversation, and for years, you know. When I went to the police station, they told me to call Verizon and told me to call the police,
Because you thought criminals were listening to your conversation? Is that what you said?
Oh, yes. Nobody can do anything with them,
So
they even installed the camera in my house,
So you feel more protected by the government listening in?
No, the government cannot do anything. Just like the Times Square, The news report that the video is not catched by the
right. But you want station. You would feel protected by the government listening in.
Yes, government should do more.
Amy, thank you very much. So, Eric, has anyone ever been a victim of these programs? Anyone you can name or even put in a category? That is, innocent people of any kind whose data somehow was used against them after the government collected it? Or is this a totally theoretical concern and a general response to bigness?
Well, the government has done a good job of making sure that we don't know the answer to that. And there was a case that ran through the courts for years and years in which civil liberties groups tried to show who had been wiretapped under the Bush programs and subsequent programs. And that was shut down in the courts. It went all the way to the Supreme Court, and it became sort of a catch-22. In order to sue over this program, you had to show that you had been wiretapped and had been harmed, but it was impossible to know if you had been wiretapped or harmed because of the secrecy surrounding it. So, we certainly have some anecdotal cases of people who appear to have gotten swept up in it who did not turn out to be terrorists or even terrorist suspects initially. And just the mere breadth of it suggests that there are going to be many false positives among legitimate ones. But to actually document that is very, very difficult.
Can you explain more about the second program to be revealed yesterday, known as PRISM? This is the data gathering program that gives the government access to the Facebook and Yahoo and Skype and Google and other servers.
Right. Our best understanding there of what that is, and this is based primarily on a PowerPoint presentation from the NSA that leaked out, is that that the NSA and the FBI have gotten direct access, which is different than what you were talking about with the Verizon program, but to direct access to the servers, allegedly, of the probably the biggest, or at least some of the biggest tech companies in the country, including the ones you mentioned, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple, Yahoo, not Twitter, interestingly, in order to collect data allegedly relating to foreign terrorism and intelligence. And as best we understand it, the line that they've created, as they often do in these cases, is we're just looking for foreign intelligence. We're not collecting the stuff on American citizens.
Right.
And if we do, if there's stuff collected inadvertently, because we're not trying, this is the government speaking, we're not trying to collect that stuff, but if we collect it inadvertently, then we use what are called, in bureaucratic speak, minimization procedures, so that you don't know, what to protect American privacy rights is always their position.
So it's different from the Verizon thing, which is domestic and international, but Apple says they never.
It's much bigger. I would say that the PRISM issue is much more significant in a lot of ways. The two main ways are that first of all, it's not just the who calls whom, the call records. It appears as if it could get deeply into the content of what's on your Facebook page or your you know, other online communications. And secondly, there's the indication that they have direct access to these tech companies. So,
but only if you're neither a U.S. citizen nor in the United States, correct?
That is, I guess I caveat that by saying that is the apparently the way it is designed to operate. There have certainly been cases in the past where that where those thresholds have been broken through, though, accidentally or intentionally.
Why not Twitter, by the way?
I'm not quite sure.
And Apple says they never heard of any such program.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of denials going on. As I say, the story is moving fairly quickly, so there are a lot of questions still to be answered.
And so a lot of coverage yet to be done, some of it no doubt by New York Times correspondent Eric Lichblau, who won a Pulitzer Prize for his coverage of the Bush surveillance program. And he's the author of the book, Bush's Law, The Remaking of American Justice, now talking about Obama's law. Thank you very much, Eric. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the end of an era in the local music biz as Maxwell's gets ready to close. We will say goodbye with co-owner Todd Abramson, and we're going to try to collect the five most memorable Maxwell's moments. So if you think you were there for one of those, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We're collecting memorable Maxwell's moments. Stay with us.